I'll tell you a bit about my background in a second, but what I was going to do is tell you how these are things are done from a more of a corporate perspective. So once you've got a running business, but I'm going to talk about it in two sections. The first of all, to talk about corporate ventures, which are actually very similar to startups, but from a large company point of view. And then to talk about how once you've got a running business, typically how business planning is done. It's a quite an extensive activity, so of necessity it's going to be fairly brief. And please feel free to ask me questions and interact as we're going along. Now, I'll just tell you a little bit about me. I'm not going to bore you with my whole biography, but I've not worked in startup world. I've worked in different corporates throughout my career. Started in high-tech research in Philips Research, working on microwave technology and radar systems, these things here. Then left and moved to Cambridge, and I became the R&D manager for what was then called Pi Unicam, working on scientific instruments, these things here. Then left. Well, I actually worked for two US companies at that time who acquired that company, and became managing director of one of their business units, which is the first time that I had to truly write a business plan because I had to go to the corporate headquarters in the US and pitch my business plan for investment in the business. I then was headhunted back to work for Philips in Cambridge again and worked on radio pagers. So I had experience of business planning for a fairly large consumer electronics activity. Then I moved to another part of Philips Consumer Electronics, which was very entrepreneurial, doing first of a kind new products. So whenever some new concept comes along, including digital television and all sorts of aspects associated with that. I then pitched an idea for a corporate venture, which was like an internal startup within the company. And I brought a copy of the business plan so you can have a look and see what a business plan would look like for that sort of activity. That's that product there. And then a couple of years ago, I left and set up as a consultant in R&D management and business planning. And I also joined the board of a scientific instrument company, Grant Instruments, here, and I'm working with them on their business planning. So that's really just in a nutshell the sort of things that I've done. I'm going to cut the next section fairly short because Stuart's covered off a lot of this, but just to explain that very often large companies tend to get into a rut. They're a television manufacturer, or let's say a video recorder manufacturer. They'll go on making video recorders till they get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, and then they go out of business because somebody comes along with a PVR. So you need to have a facility to start new businesses and new activities. And this graph shows different types of business, so you can, or different types of innovations. So you can have existing technologies but applied into new markets or into existing markets where all you can really do is reduce the cost, or you can sell into new markets, or you can add new features. That's what we call feature innovation, but the true growth comes from new markets and new products, or what we call breakaway innovation. And this is something that large corporates are not so good at. This cartoon sort of illustrates that. You see an example of the video recorder. Somebody comes along, said, "What about DVDs?" And said, "We're too busy trying to cost reduce the video recorders. We haven't got time to talk about that." So corporates tend to have processes which are corporate ventures. So the facility to fund a startup activity within the company. And that's an example of one of the businesses I've run. And the process that they tend to follow is it's exactly the same as Stuart was describing. You've got to have all the same things. But The process that, for example, Philips uses is what they call the Bell-Mason process. It's very well described in a book called The Venture Imperative by Heidi Mason and Tim Rohner. I've got a reference to that later on in the presentation, but it's worth a look because they have analysed lots of startups and corporate ventures and looked at the failures as well as successes and looked at the red flags that say, you know, if that's happening, this will fail. And they've ended up with a planning process. And it's just the same as Stuart's described. You're coming up with a new business idea in the sort of pre-seed phase. This is where you're looking at ideas, you're understanding the problems and needs that customers have, and companies look at external input as well as internal ideas. And then someone will create an elevator pitch, exactly like Stuart's described, and I did that and pitched that to the investors in Amsterdam, and they said, great idea, leave your current job, propose the plan for a venture. So that's where you move from your sort of elevator pitch to your one pager. And you spend some time in the seed phase or the pre-seed phase and then onto the seed phase, translating this idea of yours into a business case, looking at where you can get technologies, understanding the consumer need, and turning the whole thing into a value proposition, again, as Stuart's described. In a large corporate, they do tend to need a lot of convincing that there is a new business. So a lot of work goes into validating that value proposition, actually testing it with consumers to understand, is there a real need and are they really going to pay? It's like, you know, is it the ugly baby? Can you really test that it's actually a beautiful baby and we're really going to go somewhere with it? And then it goes into the what we call the alpha and beta stages, and then finally market calibration, where this is now a running business. We've created the sales, we're making the numbers, and the exit can either be a spin-off or it becomes part of an ongoing business. And usually, hasn't quite shown on the bottom of the slide there, during the course of this phase, you're always building a business plan up. It's the one pager, it's the elevator pitch, it's the plan for a plan. But when you're getting to this stage, you're asking for significant money, and then you need the full business plan. And so I've got an example if you want to have a look at it. Now, slightly different from Stuart, but I think I've written a lot of business plans in my time. They all follow basically the same principle, whether it's 12 sections or 15 or 10, they're all slightly different. But one of the most important things is keep it sharp. I've seen business plans, I saw one the other day that was 70 pages long. It's so easy to start writing a long one. The important thing is that investors are not going to be interested. They see a lot of these things. It needs to be fairly short. I've suggested about 15 pages, excluding appendices. You're going to add other things on there, but you want to cover off all the things that Stuart mentioned in that plan. And it needs an executive summary of, I've sometimes seen no more than 2 pages, but I've never managed to do that, I have to tell you. More like 2 to 4 pages, which says, you know, what is this pain or the need, and why is this venture going to address it? Who cares about it and is willing to pay for it? And why are you going to win? And you've got to get that across to the investors. You then go through the other sections, the things like the brand, the approach you're going to adopt to the marketing it. Why should an investor invest now? What is the product or service, and service depends what it is, that you're going to do? Who are your target markets? How are you going to create the value? What are the value propositions and have they been validated? What's the competition? So you need to clearly understand. This is one of the things that, you know, when you're starting a business, you can have indirect competitors sometimes. You know, you could actually be competitors for your customers' money. What's your business model? How are you going to generate the revenue? Are you going to make, buy, or partner? What is the development plan for the product or service, the key milestones, and how are you going to manufacture it and get it supported? How much money do you need? And the financial plan with a sensitivity analysis and a top-level decision tree. that's how a corporate would do these things. But I think it's quite similar, right, that to how a startup would go and pitch. Because I've taken these sort of things and pitched them to external investors, so they look for the same things. So that's the sort of entrepreneurial start. So you're getting the business established. Once you're established and you've got a running business, things start to work in a different way. This is an example, I've modified it slightly, but it's an example of how a large consumer electronics company runs its business planning. For a lot of people involved, everything works on a 12-month cycle once you've got into a running business, because you've got 12-month budgets, everything runs against shareholder meetings and our quarterly targets and so forth. This is an example of a company that had their financial year is the same as the calendar year, so it's quite easy to see this. And you've got a number of different functions in here. So you've got the overall management of the business unit. So if you imagine a large company like Apple, underneath it, it'll have business units, the iPad business, the iPod, the Mac business, and so forth. So they'll have a business unit management. You'll have the product managers who own the product or service, marketing department, the program or project management, the technology guys, the advanced development or research, the R&D management, the people actually run the overall product development, and then the supply management, which you can think of as operations, you know, the factories, how you're going to supply it, so forth. And typically, at the end of a year, the marketing, the technology people, and the manufacturing people will be looking at the trends in the marketplace and looking at scenarios. There will be a running business plan, but it's updated on a rolling basis. And the product managers who own the products will be proposing an overall global product plan for the next year. They've usually got a roadmap that rolls out longer, but they've got to justify their budgets for the coming year. They will end up, so this is what we call the review stage, and then they're into the thinking about, okay, what is going to be our rolling business unit strategy? So they usually have a business plan that is rolling and updating. Typically, in businesses I've been in, on a three-year basis, because any more than that, you can't really foresee. And it's the first, it's the next year that you're really planning in detail. And having refined and agreed the strategy, you then go into the planning phase, which is planning and optimizing the overall product portfolio, detailing the projects that you're going to run with, what your technology innovation program is, and proposing what's called the master plan for manufacture. Then comes back into the final stage of finalizing that plan, and then you are running with the following year's program. I think that ongoing business planning is about a strategic alignment, so ensuring that you've got a number of different development projects that they're aligned with the business strategy, maximizing the value, because you've got limited resources and you've got to look at how you're going to invest those resources to meet the overall company objectives, and having a balance of long-term and short-term. It's very easy for some people to focus on too short-term and neglect the long-term, so you need to do that thinking. And it all starts with the strategy. So companies need to have a very clear mission and vision, the critical success factors that are needed to achieve their mission and vision, their strategic focus areas and different initiatives, and it's all based on this analysis of the market, the competition, the industry, and the capability they've got. And that defines the strategic areas for their new product development. And I'm just giving you examples of some of the tools here that get used. I don't know if you've come across the Boston Matrix, but bear in mind when you've got a set of products running in a company, you can map them. I like to map them onto sort of bubble charts, so you can see a sort of mix across here. And this is showing the relative market share of, so low market share on the right-hand side, high on the left. I've tended to reverse this matrix compared to where you'll see it in the publications, just because I like to see the way that the cycle of the projects goes versus the market growth opportunity. So very often when you've got a new development, an exciting new product idea, you've got relatively low market share, but you see a growth opportunity for it. And that's what we'd call a wildcat. You've got to be quite careful. You can overinvest in that area and neglect some of the other areas. But you want to be constantly looking, is this the new new iPod for the future, for example? Well, hopefully what it does is to move in a situation where you've built up your market share, and the ideal is you've got lots of stars in here. You've got achieved a high market share, and then further investment is for ongoing growth. But all products follow this cycle and then move down to a situation where the market growth has stabilised. At the moment, for example, in television, which is something I've worked in the past, there's a real problem with televisions. The market is completely saturated. Everybody's got their flat screen, high def televisions, and no one wants a new one because they last for a long time. So they're moving to a situation where the growth is actually low. In fact, they're probably moving into the dog stage for some of these, which is so you can often have products which are, you don't need to invest further. You just need to keep them going. You've got a high market share, but the growth is low. So you don't put a lot of investment into those. You milk them, basically, for investment for going into the other areas. And then ultimately, they'll move into the dog stage. Sorry, this one, that, which is where you've got to divest it or kill it. And when you're planning businesses, you're always knowing where your products are on the Boston matrix. Another one that I like to use is the ANSOS matrix, which is actually mapping products and markets. So similar to that diagram I showed at the start of the presentation, but existing products in new markets, or products, existing products in existing markets, or going into new markets, new products in existing markets, new products in new markets. Another thing that you'll do when you're in the planning phase is roadmaps, looking at the future. This is a technique that developed in Cambridge University at the Institute for Manufacture, Rob Fole. And I've used this technique in a number of businesses. And it's a very powerful planning technique to actually have a session every few years where you're looking at the business, the market and business trends and drivers. What happened in the past? What's happening in the future, in the short, medium and long term? And then how is technology developing? Or what are the enablers and barriers that are going to occur that allow you to match new technologies with new market needs and create new products? And it's a very useful planning technique in conjunction with the others to start generating the roadmap of products that you're going to need to invest in for the future. To show you an example, this is an example of a road mapping workshop. So you've got in a business with yours truly at the front, they're generating the roadmap on the wall here. So it's actually got external customers, it's got the R&D people, the managing director, other people actually planning out what are the what ifs for next year and further out. Very important to understand if you're in high-tech products, the innovation curve. There's a book called Crossing the Chasm. I forgot for the moment who the author is, but it's in the presentation. Got dropped off at the bottom, I think. So you need to know when you're looking at the different products as well. Sales, as you start to selling a new product to the innovators, the first people that started buying MP3 players were people buying sort of Diamond Rio MP3 players that, you know, they were nerds basically and knew how to set it up to play their records. But you need to be up here. The position where Apple are is they're up into the majority. And that's where the profits are, the big money. So you need to know where your products are in that sort of curve. Another tool that I've used a lot is the product S curve. So where is that product? It's related, I think, on the overall product life cycle. Because products start to they build up sales in a business. They're in the growth stage, then they flatten out. So it's another way of looking at some of the things we talked about. Probably in the maturity stage, might well be a cash cow. But then they decline, and you've got to look when you're doing your planning at where are these products going to go? When do I need to kill them? The ideal is that you're managing all these different products in a business so that you are bringing out the next product as the other one's dying, and then the next one, and so forth. So you're stabilizing the profit, and hopefully growing the business. Doesn't always work like that, I have to tell you from real experience. The other interesting thing that when I talk about entrepreneurial startup, one of the things that companies often have to do is to manage the end of life of products. And you have what's the various different decline phases. So you can see, I've been in the consumer electronics business, and it's been really shocking how rapidly something can decline. It can just fall off a cliff sometimes, much faster than anyone imagined. Ideally, you've got more of a steady decline, and you can actually plan for that. But you could sometimes have a situation in some components where it actually declines and stabilizes and goes on for years and years. I worked in military electronics at one stage, and I was in an interesting situation there with products that were very difficult to maintain. They were going into military systems, and sometimes they were 20 or 30 years old because they keep buying them. And sometimes it's not economic for factories to make them, so you've got to find clever ways of dealing with those, or maybe shifting them to another company to make them. When it comes to working out where you're going to put your investment, there are a lot of different things you have to look at in terms of ranking the financial criteria. You know, how much is it going to pay back? Does it fit with your overall strategy of the business? What are the risks and the probabilities of success? Because you may not want to put all your eggs into a highly risky basket, but you do want to have some money in those sort of more speculative areas. Can you do it? Do you have the capability to do it? Is the synergy with other projects and getting this balance of the short term and the high risk? In terms of financial payback models, that's all sorts of, you'll find accountants will get carried away with all sorts of very clever models for doing financial models. My philosophy is keep it simple. If you make it excessively complicated, you can kid yourself and actually realize that you don't actually understand the market, or you've actually got poor input data, but the complexity of the model makes it sound as though it's okay. So that's a quick canter through how you do planning in a steady state business, if you can call it that. So certainly in the corporate startup area, when I was working at Philips, they used the what they call the Bell-Mason technique, which is actually written by these two American gurus, Heidi Mason and Tim Rohner. So it's a very good book. It's probably relevant to startups as well, so it's worth a look at that. And it's very good for making sure you don't push ahead too far with one aspect of the business and neglect another, because you can actually map how well you're doing at different phases of the development. There are lots of different tools for planning in an ongoing business. I've only given you a quick canter through just to show you, but the Boston and Ansoff matrices, value roadmap, I think is a very powerful technique. Understanding the product life cycle. And you'll see in an ongoing business that strategic and operational management are all involved with this. So it's not just one part of the company that's responsible.